Welcome to the Monday Night Sports Show on the VOCM Big Land FM radio network. The views and opinions expressed on this show are not necessarily those of this station. Now here's the host of the Monday Night Sports Show, Ben Murphy.
Good evening, everybody. Welcome and thank you for joining me on another episode of the Monday Night Sports Show on your 590 VOCM and Labrador's Big Land FM. I'm your host, Ben Murphy, and we have Mr. Zach Snow back behind the glass producing the show as he does every week. Zach, my man, how are you?
I am doing good. Just hearing those Santa calls, it's really putting me in the Christmas spirit, man.
It is. You're right there, I gotta say.
Yeah, but you know one thing I want for Christmas, Ben?
I bet you I could guess, but you go ahead.
It's to give a ticket to Montreal to get them to the Stanley Cup playoffs. But we can't have everything, hey?
No, and hopefully you don't get your Christmas wish, because technically the league tabs are ahead of the Leafs in standings right now.
Yeah, but one thing we can have is another great show, so it's off to you.
All right. Let's go. You're on fire. All right, as they are each and every week here on the Monday Night Sports Show, the phone lines are open. We're taking calls for the next 2 hours, and all you have to do is call Zach at 273-5211. Or 1-888-590-8626, and we'll get you on the air to talk about anything in the world of sports that you would like. So again, the phone lines are wide open for each and any one of you to call, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-VOCM. And if you have any questions or anything you want to chat about in the world of sports, you can also tweet at me at BenMurphy590 and join in on the conversation that way. The Monday Night Sports Show is brought to you by Maverick Sports and Collectibles, our friends at 250 Water Street. They have everything for the sports fan. Maverick is your local expert when it comes to sports apparel and memorabilia. They carry NHL, NBA, MLB, NFL, and soccer. They have sports cards, signed pictures, and memorabilia, t-shirts, hats, hoodies, and jackets, jerseys, and sports figurines, everything you need. And everything to support your local teams, the St. John's Edge and our Newfoundland Growlers, who had a big weekend, kind of split up as the Growlers and the St. John's Maple Leafs. And I understand there's lots happening down at the shop. It is their 20th anniversary here this year, so more sales are continuing, but we will hear from Andrew Corbett a little later in the program, as we do each and every week here on the program. But we're going to get to all of it, not without your help. So get the phone lines out and give us a call over the next 2 hours. Again, call Zach, 273-5211 or 1-888-590-VOCM. But as I just mentioned, the St. John's Edge. We are getting closer and closer to St. John's Edge time, and I am very happy to welcome my next guest back here to the VOCM studios again tonight. Friend of the show, Mr. Michael Kennedy. Welcome back to the program.
Ben, it's good to be back on the show.
Thanks for joining me here again tonight. And this time, we're talking Edge, but you got a little bit of news to share with us as well, and as you might have come across it on Twitter already, but you have a new podcast that's all things St. John's Edge called Edge Talk. Tell us all about it.
Absolutely. The Edge Talk podcast, well, a little bit of an idea I came up with on my own. As you know, been a huge follower of the team ever since day one, since the Edge came to St. John's. So, you know, over time, been getting lots of questions from people, and just tended to grow and grow and grow. So I said, you know, podcasting is really becoming a huge thing.
Big time.
Yeah. So why not have a show dedicated to covering all things focusing on St. John's Edge? So the premise behind the show is going to be a minimum of one episode per week.
Cool.
You know, we'll time to time we'll have special guests on the show, you know, coaches, players, that sort of thing. Maybe even harken back to players or moments from the first two seasons.
Totally, you know? Of course. Yeah. That'd be awesome.
Yeah. So we're going to touch on that sort of thing, but, you know, people can find us on the usual podcast platforms, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, all those platforms.
So is this something you're going to be doing by yourself, or are you going to have like a co-host type of thing?
Right now, it's by myself. Cool. with guests.
Of course, yeah.
And the focus is to have a guest every single week, if possible. The first episode just came out late last week, and it was more of a launch.
Yeah.
More so than anything. Episode two will probably be out, I'm estimating, tomorrow night. And episode three is actually going to be in a couple of days. So we're going to have bang, bang. We're going to have two more coming out really fast.
Gotcha.
Because training camp launched
Friday
past. And I was fortunate enough to, you know, to sit in on a practice this past weekend, and we'll touch on that a little bit later. Mm-hmm. But yeah, so in terms of talking about things to do with the Edge, you know, it'll be the typical stuff: the rumors, potential signings, trades, who's playing well, mm-hmm. You know, what's going on with the team. So we're going to really cover all that stuff and dive right into it. And it'll really help the fans because, you know, it'll give people a really intimate connection with
Absolutely.
The team. Get to know the players
really,
better.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, dissect the games. And the gameplay and what's going on with St. John's Edge.
Yeah, and I mean that's great because especially with the NBL Canada, you can't always watch the streams unless you subscribe. I'm pretty sure that's how it works to get the streams online and stuff. So
yeah, it's a pay-per-view platform.
Right.
You can pay per team, you can pay for the entire league, or you can pay per game.
Right. Okay.
Myself, I subscribe to the entire league.
Naturally.
I followed, like I said, since day one.
Yeah.
I followed it, but so when the Edge are on the road and people are not subscribed to the platform.
Mm-hmm.
They may not be able to get an
an
in-depth analysis as to what's going on with the team and how the games went. So aside from the weekly episodes, there is going to be post-game recaps.
Okay, cool.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah, yeah. And hopefully, you know, we'll be able to integrate some interviews with players and coaches.
So how much work is that for you to put that off all by yourself and record it and tape it and, you know, the works of it?
Well, you probably know better than the average Joe, but, you know, the first episode took quite a bit of work. So you work because you're just sitting there and you're trying to figure out, what am I going to say? But I'm surprised. It's coming pretty quick now because, you know, you get a grasp on it and you can kind of lay out a little bit of a blueprint to follow. So all of that is in place now, and I'd say to produce a typical episode is going to take me probably 1.5 to 2 hours.
Okay. And so what can we kind of expect in that first episode without giving too much away? Because obviously we want people to go listen to it. But, you know, without giving too much away, what can we expect in that first episode?
Well, like I said, training camp launched Friday past. I've attended one practice already, another one coming up. So I'm going to be giving a very in-depth analysis as to what mm-hmm. is going on at practices, who's really standing out, and how the roster is probably going to start shaping up.
Okay, great. Well, with that, we'll take our first time out of the evening, and when we come back, we're continuing this conversation with Michael Kennedy and his new podcast, Edge Talk, all things St. John's Edge. We'll be right back on the Monday Night Sports Show, brought to you by Maverick Sports and Collectibles, right after this.
The Monday Night Sports Show will be right back. This is the Monday Night Sports Show on the VOCM Bigland Radio Network.
The Monday Night Sports Show is brought to you by Maverick Sports and Collectibles, 250 Water Street. Everything for the sports fan.
Welcome back to the program. This is the Monday Night Sports Show. I'm your host, Ben Murphy. I'm joined here live in studio by Michael Kennedy, and he is the host of new podcast called Edge Talk, talking about all things St. John's Edge. But now, you did talk about training camp opened on Friday. You took in some practices. What did you think?
Well, let me just say, put it to you this way. If the pace was anywhere from 1 to 10, the boys were at 11.
That's a good sign for the first week of the training camp.
Oh, man, it was fast. Mm-hmm. It was fast. It was athletic. It was exciting. I think we're going to see a different pace, a different brand of basketball down at Mile One Center this season. Definitely younger roster. Athletic, can I say that word enough? Some of these guys are absolutely mm-hmm. mind-blowing. One guy that really comes to mind, Carrington Ward, a 50-year vet and spent a number of years in the NBA G League. I'm pretty sure the guy has like a 40-inch vertical. Every time he goes to the basket, give him one good step.
Yeah,
get out of the way.
Just gone.
Take off.
And that's what I found. I found like when I was reading about a lot of these guys and the signing announcements were coming out that it was all, you know, athleticism based, and all these people were, you know, such incredible athletes, almost first and foremost. They were great athletes, and it seemed like that was kind of the focus this year. And what difference do you think that will make for what the fans are going to see on the court?
Well, I mean, basketball is no different than hockey or any other sport. The evolution of sports today seems to be growing faster mm-hmm. than ever. In the NBA these days, you hear the term positionless basketball, right?
Yep.
And with the Edge, I think what you're going to see is a roster of 10 to 12 guys, 10, 11, 12, depending on what night it is.
Yeah.
But they can throw a number of looks at you. They can play some small ball where they're going to be super, super fast. They mm-hmm. can play some highly athletic and physical basketball. But then again, you've got your tried and true vets like your junior Cadogan, who's back this year, and they're going to really drag you through the trenches and make you grind it out. You know, there's going to be a ton of different looks, but make no mistake, I think the brand of basketball at Mile One is going to be probably a significant higher level of pace than what we're used to.
Yeah, which is very exciting because, I mean, in almost every sport, like you did mention, you know, speed is everything.
Yeah.
Right now and everywhere you look. And it's it'll be super cool to see that style of play come here. Obviously, we saw a lot of three-point shooting and stuff last year. And I'm sure we still will see quite a bit of that this year as well because, you know, it is a three-point shooting league.
Oh,
but,
my goodness.
But to see that speed and that athleticism, it's going to be exciting to see some new faces get in here. But from your own takeaway, who do you think or who do you expect to be maybe that number one guy? Do you think it'll be Carrington Ward or
no? No. I see him as a starter. My previous two times in here talking to you, I'm probably going to sound like a broken record because I think the go-to guy is going to be Murphy Bernatowski.
Okay.
Yeah, Murphy got back in town today. Back on the court tomorrow with the team, as far as I understand. Actually, he might be practicing tonight. You know, that guy's got a resume now of 7-8 years professional ball under his belt. So, they're going to build a strong offense where he's going to be, you know, one of the top options. Yeah. And he's got a very diverse game, you know, inside, outside. He can do a little bit of everything.
Yeah, I remember there was one point in the game last year where he was not on the court. He was. And this was in warm-up, and he didn't play for a while, but he was just over doing his own thing kind of on the side, and he's just putting up three ball after three, and it was just money.
Yeah.
Money. And then it was one of the intermissions between the quarters. It was the same thing. He's just out shooting around. It's money. I was like, get this guy on the floor. So, you really expect him to have a big standout year.
Yeah. Well, he's got the skill set and the potential to be an MVP candidate in this league. He really does. Another guy that comes to mind is a younger guy, actually. He only played 2 years of Division I ball in the States before turning pro. There was a coaching change at his university, and rather than do a transfer and have to sit out a year, he decided to turn pro. Maverick Rowan.
Okay, that's what I was about to ask about next. Yeah.
So Mav is 6'7", but he's a guard. And the thing that intrigues me about him is he's, like you said, he's a sniper, he's a shooter.
Yeah.
He can also put the ball on the floor, create a shot. So he's not just one-dimensional in terms of catch and shoot. No, this guy can create a little bit of space for himself also.
Awesome. Well, God, but we really do have an exciting team shaping up here this year.
Well, the pieces are there. It's just, you know, everything's got to
come together.
Yeah, it's all got to be tied together.
Yep. And now I guess we have an exhibition game coming up pretty soon, and we haven't had an exhibition game in the first two seasons. How big of a difference is this going to make for the team in your eyes, not having their first time playing a real game together on the first night of the season?
Yeah, well, I mean, the first couple of seasons, I think there was inter-squad games.
Far does that really go?
You know what I mean,
in preparation?
It doesn't, because these guys are around each other 20, pretty much, you know, aside from sleeping. They're probably around each other the rest of the day. So for them to play an inter-squad game is not the same. But to get out there and have some real game action, and they're going to be facing the Moncton Magic, the league champions, as we well know from this past spring at Mall 1. On Sunday at 2 p.m. So, you know, it'll mean a lot in terms of, you know, the team going forward for how they, how the roster shakes out.
Mm-hmm.
Because, to be honest with you, from what I saw, I'd have a hard time picking who's going to be cut.
Yeah. And how many guys do they need to cut?
Well, right now there's 14 guys. Cassidy Ryan elected to go to Europe, so they've got to cut down to 11.
Right. Okay.
Okay, so three guys have got to be cut.
Still not easy.
I can't pick one. So I really feel for Coach Marcus and Jeff and Glenn in terms of how they're going to do this. And to be honest, you know, if you talk to them, they're probably going to say it's not about who deserves to go home. It's just a matter of how the roster is going to shape out and where certain positions are going to fill up first. Right. So,
gotcha.
Yeah, there's going to be some unfortunate cuts there, I would imagine. And it is what it is. But, that's probably how it'll go.
And I know last year there was the Edge ran into a major injury issue where they were running a pretty short bench. And I know there was league rules, and I'm not that certain exactly what that ruling was or how it worked in terms of being able to pick guys up when they had to go out with like seven or eight guys dressing each night. So has there been any change there in that capacity with the league?
Well, previously you needed to have five Canadians rostered.
Okay.
Now they could be on the injured reserve,
mm-hmm.
but it's not the same this year. This year you're only allowed a maximum of seven imports. So you can go seven and three Canadians with, for a total of 10 guys. You can go 7-4 or 7-5, right? So, you know, if injuries come into play, that's how the roster rules will take precedent. But you're not required to have five Canadians as much as you're limited
mm-hmm.
to the seven imports.
Gotcha. Yeah. Okay. And can we expect the Edge to still be right there at the top of the standings come season end?
You're asking the wrong guy. No, I mean, in all honesty, this league, as we've come to expect, it's never a done deal, right? Yeah, there's a lot of basketball ahead. Moncton have made some pretty big signings. That being said, they've got to play 36 games, the same as everybody else.
Yep.
Everybody starts in first place. The Edge have a lot of new faces to this league. But they're not new basketball players. These are guys that are coming from European leagues. These are guys that are coming from the NBA G League. A couple of these guys are coming basically straight out of NCAA. So the scouting report on the Edge right now for the rest of the league is probably pretty gray.
Yeah.
Right? So they could raise some eyebrows.
Can you give us any names of Moncton signing, some of those big names?
Yeah. Former St. John's Edge player Maurice Jones actually hasn't signed with Moncton yet.
Okay.
But he was acquired in a trade last week because the Sudbury Five had Mo Jones's rights.
Right.
So they traded the rights to Mo Jones to Moncton for a guy named Justin Maas, who was a power forward, played in this league 4 or 5 years ago,
mm-hmm.
you know, 20-10 guy, 20 points, 10 rebounds a night. Kind of fills the void for Sudbury. But yeah, Mo Jones, they, of course, Billy White, we're very familiar with from last year in the playoffs. Corey Allman, another guy. Trey Kell, if you remember, who was their dominant force, he's gone overseas. So, you know, a team looks a lot better when you've got a Trey Kell who really creates things for the Billy Whites and the Corey Allmans and those things. So, it'd be interesting to see how things shape up for Moncton and, of course, for St. John's Edge.
Yeah. So we'll take another time out, and when we come back, we're going to continue this conversation about all things St. John's Edge with Michael Kennedy. We'll be right back on the Monday Night Sports Show brought to you by Maverick Sports and Collectibles right after this.
The Monday Night Sports Show will be right back. This is the Monday Night Sports Show on the VOCM Big Land Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. This is the Monday Night Sports Show on your 590 VOCM and Labrador's Big Land FM. I'm joined here live in studio by Michael Kennedy, who is now starting a brand new podcast, Edge Talk, about all things St. John's Edge. So we're going to continue talking about the St. John's Edge. Great attendance we've had for the last two seasons. It's been some of the best in the league, if not the best. Do you expect that to be right there again this year? Because I understand there are a few more weekday games rather than weekends, which has always been a little bit of an issue for attendance. But do you think that attendance is still going to be right there, passionate like it was in years past?
Yeah, I think the Edge will still lead the league in attendance. Will they average 3,800 per game? Remains to be seen, right?
Mm-hmm.
When you get a lot of Tuesday night games, Monday, Wednesdays, you know. Last year there was some good Friday night games and Sunday afternoon games.
Sunday afternoon games are great.
Awesome, awesome. You know, you get a lot of family attendance and kids are out screaming at high-pitched squeal.
Yeah.
Right? So, you know, there will be some Sundays this year, but the weeknight thing may come into play a small bit, but at the same time, I think they'll average 3,200 a game.
Yeah, I mean, which you can't really...
In this league, that's a lot.
That's great. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Now, we did talk about a little bit about the CEBL in between the break there, and that happens now each summer. They're one summer in, but they have hit some pretty impressive sponsors and whatnot so far. But can you think there's maybe a chance we ever see a merger come between the NBL Canada and this CEBL?
Simply put, no. I don't see a merger happening between the CEBL and the NBL Canada simply because of the history there.
Gotcha.
The CEBL was started by the owner of the Niagara River Lions, who actually left the National Basketball League of Canada and started their own league. So there is some animosity there between, between the league owners and the I guess, former business partners and current league and owners of the teams right now in the NBL Canada. That being said, for the betterment of basketball, for the betterment of the business model, who knows what the future could bring. Right now, one is a winter league,
right?
The NBL Canada. One is a summer league, which is the CEBL. And, you know, like you said, they do have some good sponsorships. They've made some impressive moves, and where it goes, it'll be interesting.
Yeah, it is kind of hard to say, but, you know, the thought of one nationwide league is pretty cool.
It's pretty tempting.
Tough. I'm sure it gets tough in terms of some costs and whatnot and different parts of the country, but, you know, it is a very cool idea.
Well, let's say, hypothetically, you get to 14, 16 teams, and you divide it into two conferences, East and West. Minimizes travel expenses, right?
Which is what every other professional league does.
Well, CBL, for example, has a team in Fraser Valley, British Columbia. Now, let's see the Edge go to Fraser Valley, British Columbia.
Exactly.
Man, oh man, for a minor, you know, for minor league basketball, that's going to be a non-starter right there.
Yeah, yeah, totally. But so now I did want to ask you just lastly before we run out of time. Do you have an idea about who might take really the reins on that leadership role this year? Do you expect to see that kind of come from like a Murphy Bernatowski, a Junior Cadugan, or?
Yeah, I'd say those two will be your, I'll call them co-captains.
Yeah.
Murphy's the type of guy, leads by example. He's a little bit quieter. Junior is the vocal guy who really, but the reason he leads by vocally is because he's there to back it up with his performance on the court, right?
Exactly.
Nobody works harder than Junior Cadugan.
You know,
he's as blue-collar basketball player as you're going to find, and getting there, grind it out, and work his butt off.
Yeah, because, you know, he essentially is someone who got hurt and was told that he was not good enough anymore.
He was finished.
And then he comes here, like you said, absolutely worked his butt off, and in what was not originally believed to be a starter position, works his way into the starter position, kind of, you know, almost bumps Mo Jones out of there a little bit, and here we are. So, I mean, he's just a phenomenal story and a great person, so it's hard to imagine him not being a leader.
Yeah, not only that, but not only he went from being told you're done to being the most improved player in the league, right? So that's a testament to hard work right there.
Absolutely. Yeah. And well, Michael, we're just about out of time there now, so I guess I'll just one last plug about this exhibition game on Sunday.
Yeah.
I'll get you to that one first, just about what people can expect here on Sunday.
Well, from what I'm told, 2 p.m. Sunday at Moncton Magic, we'll be in town playing St. John's Edge. I think you'll see, you know, your Murphy and your Junior will be out there a little bit, but I think you're going to see the newer guys are really going to get a chance to get out there and shine.
Yeah.
Because it's so competitive, and from what I'm told, this decision is going to be tough.
And I wanted to ask you about local guy. I had him on the program here last week, or 2 weeks ago, Noel Moffitt. He's taking a run for the St. John's Edge this year. What were your thoughts when you saw him in training camp?
Looks good.
Yeah?
Looks good. I mean, you know, Noel is out there. He held his own, hit a few baskets, but he actually had one really good steal on defense. And, you know, Jesse Jones, he's a big name on this team. He's got I think he's going to be a fan favorite, but he kind of picked Jesse's pocket a little bit. I think it was the boys kind of give him a little bit of a charge.
He's another one of those guys who's just a phenomenal athlete.
Yeah.
Just a freak athlete.
Tell you, the skills are there. It's as obvious as soon as he gets the ball in his hands.
Awesome. I am so excited for Sunday, just for all of this to get underway. But Michael, before we go to the break, one final plug for how people can listen to Edge Talk.
Yeah, Edge Talk podcast. You can listen to it on your usual podcast platforms, be it iTunes, Google Play, Stitcher, Spotify, of course. And even if you go and search for Edge Talk podcast, it's probably going to come up.
And on Twitter as well.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at HTalk.
Perfect. Well, Michael Kennedy, thank you so much for joining me here in studio to kick off this first hour. As always, it's a pleasure having you here. Love talking the Edge with you, and I look forward to doing it again soon. Listening to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Anytime. All right, with that, Zach, we're going to take a timeout, and when we come back, we're going to speak with Andrew Corbett from Maverick Sports and Collectibles before we look at the weekend in sports locally. We'll be right back on the Monday Night Sports Show right after this. Don't go away.
The Monday Night Sports Show will be right back. This is the Monday Night Sports Show on the VOCM Big Land Radio Network.
The Monday Night Sports Show is brought to you by Maverick Sports and Collectibles, 250 Water Street. Everything for the sports fan.
Welcome back to the program, everybody. This is the Monday Night Sports Show on your 590 VOCM and Labrador's Big Land FM. I'm your host, Ben Murphy. And we're going to jump over to line number one, where we have Andrew Corbett on the line. Andrew, you are on the air.
Hey, Ben. How you doing tonight?
I'm good, sir. And yourself?
Good, good.
I understand there's lots happening down at the shop. More daily anniversary deals are continuing. What can you tell us?
Yes, yes. Busy, busy. As we get closer to Christmas.
Oh, yeah.
So I'll give you the daily deals for the moment now. So we did the Montreal deal and the Toronto deal before, so we're going to make it up for a few other teams now. So for tomorrow only, for Boston fans and Detroit Red Wing fans, everything that is Boston and Detroit tomorrow will be 25% off in the store.
Wow.
And also tomorrow, we're also going to do all polo shirts in all sports, from basketball, hockey, and right across the board. They're all going to be 25% off as well. And an extra little special thing we always do, we have a signed Hulk Hogan 16x20 picture, which will be $99 tomorrow.
Wow. So a lot of pretty good sales happening.
Yes, yes. We're trying to keep some different stuff every day. Everybody, like I say, every week, keep an eye on Facebook, because every week, every day on Facebook, every morning, we'll have the new things there. Also, lots of new stuff out this week. Lots of new jerseys still coming in. We got the outdoor one for Dallas and Nashville and the game they're going to play. The new Bruins alternate one that they wore the other night. We got that one in now. And all the other ones of those are slowly coming in. Lots of stuff every day now. If our card releases this week, we have a new one, a little bit more expensive product called Upper Deck Buyback, which what they do is they actually go back to previous years and pick up stuff like McDavid rookies and Crosby rookies and then expensive cards like that, and then they repackage them and put them out as a buyback product. They did it once before, and it was really, really popular, so they're doing it again. So that comes out on Wednesday. Another product, the Upper Deck tins and blaster boxes and fat packs and the little albums that come with some special packs of cards that we get every year for Christmas, they're all available now. And yes, just busy, busy. Jerseys are especially a big thing this Christmas. We're selling lots of jerseys. We got them from all sizes, from babies up to 5XL. So if you need a jersey for someone on your list, give us a call and we'll see if we can help you out.
Okay, wow. So there is a lot going on down at the shop. But Andrew, I want to ask you, just because when the NHL first switched over to Adidas jerseys, I was one person who was pretty skeptical about the whole thing and didn't really know how that would all work. But now I totally take it all back, because they are some of the most beautiful hockey jerseys that have ever been created. What are your thoughts on the new Adidas jerseys?
They're certainly doing some nice ones now. The only downdraw at the moment is that Adidas hasn't really gone back and done the old jerseys. We get a lot of demand for teams that are defunct and jerseys that teams wore in previous years and stuff like that. CCM used to be pretty good about doing them. But now we get the Gretzky and the Lemieux and the Patrick Waugh and the common ones, kind of like that they're doing. But I'm hoping they're going to expand that line down the line next year. But they're certainly doing a lot of nice third jerseys. And then Adidas, along with Fanatics, who also does the jerseys now, they've certainly been great sellers.
And, well, Andrew, is there anything else you'd like to add?
No, I think that's all the things this year. Like I say, we'll be having special deals and specials right up until Christmas Day now for our 20th anniversary and for Christmas. So keep an eye on our Facebook page and certainly give us a call if you want any details on anything.
All right. Well, Andrew, thank you very much for joining us on the program here again tonight. I always appreciate it. We'll chat again next week.
All right. Thanks. You have a good night.
You too. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.
Yeah, that's Andrew Corbett from down at Maverick Sports and Collectibles at 250 Water Street. And again, yeah, Boston and Detroit fans, Boston Bruins, Detroit Red Wings, everything down at Maverick, 25% off in store tomorrow. Anything with the Detroit Boston logo, I mean, you gotta love that. And again, all polo shirts and all sports, also 25% off. So lots of great sales celebrating that anniversary. Now, I guess it's time to look back over the weekend in sports. But we'll start with the Newfoundland Growlers. They had a large weekend this past weekend, getting the sweep against the Worcester Railers. They beat the Railers 7-5 at the mile one in a game that saw a six-goal third period for the Growlers. Yes, six goals in the third. How are ya? But then the St. John's Maple Leafs. Oh, yeah. It was throwback 90s night at the mile one Saturday, with those beautiful blue and white St. John's Maple Leafs jerseys being broken out. Unbelievably beautiful. It was just a sight for sore eyes. I don't care if you're a Habs fan. Zach's, he's kissing it. It's good. Okay, we're getting a bit of respect from the Habs fan, but I don't care what team you cheer for. those jerseys were awesome with the St. John's Maple Leafs logo. Absolutely perfection. Great job by the Growlers. But they went all in. They changed their Twitter. The whole works. Even if you go back and look at the game recap, it doesn't say anything about the Newfoundland Growlers. It only says the St. John's Maple Leafs. So I thought that was super cool. And the effort wasn't wasted as the Maple Leafs won again, extending their win streak to 5 games in a row with a 3-2 win on Saturday night. I mean, just absolutely awesome stuff. They've been doing all season long, including the student nights. There's all kinds of different events happening down almost every time the Growlers have a home game. So if you have not gotten out to support them yet, they have a great team again this year that's going to be right back there in the thick of it come playoff time and right at the top of the standings again. And I mean, in saying that, with those two wins, the Growlers now take possession of first place in the Eastern Conference. So, I mean, they have a great team here already. They're showing that, and they're going to be right back there in that hunt for a repeat later in the spring. So again, if you haven't got down there, get down, give the boys support, because they have a great thing going down at the Mile One. The Growlers have now hit the road for a 3-game road trip. That's beginning Wednesday night in West Valley City, Utah, against the Western Conference's Utah Grizzlies, the ECHL affiliate of the Colorado Avalanche. Puck drop, 10:40 p.m. local time here. Fans can tune in to Chris Ballard, friend of the show, his call of the game at mixler.com/NL Growlers. So you won't be disappointed there. Moving on to the St. John's Junior Hockey League. The league, they took the weekend off this past weekend for the old exam break that they get every year around this time. But we'll just take a quick look at the leading scorers, because Kyle McGraw of the St. John's Caps, he is number one by no surprise. In 14 games, he has 13 goals and 18 assists for 31 points. I mean, not bad. Just over 2 points a game. James O'Brien of the Mount Pearl Blades, he is close behind in second place with 6 goals and 23 assists for 29 points in 16 games played. And oh yeah, Colin McGraw also has 8 goals in senior hockey at this point as well. So 13 in junior, 8 in senior, not a big deal. The guy rips. In third, Blake Fudge of CBR with 28 points. Luke Ackerman of the CBN Stars, and then Nick Fudge again of the CBR Renegades. They're both tied in fourth with 26 points. The Mount Pearl Blades are still in first in the St. John's Junior Hockey League, with the defending champ CBR Renegades close behind. Now, coming up this weekend in St. John's Junior Hockey action, they're back. Starting on Friday night, the Paradise Warriors make their way out to Bay Roberts to take on the CBN Stars in the Bay Arena at 7:30. The CBR Renegades are down in Southern Shore to take on the Breakers at the Ken Williams Southern Shore Arena. That one goes at 7:45. Then on Saturday, the Avalon Capitals and CBR Renegades go toe-to-toe in the Goulds. Puck drop at 8 o'clock for that one. Then at the same time, Trinity Placentia Flyers take on the St. John's Caps. That's at Twin Rinks here in St. John's. Then on Sunday, the Avalon Capitals back in action against the Mount Pearl Blades. 7:15. It does say right now that that one's going on at Twin Rinks. We do need to double check that, because I'm not entirely sure. Normally Mount Pearl would play in Mount Pearl, but as it is the Christmas season, there very well might be something happening there. And so that game, as according to the website, is going down at Twin Rinks. Then at 7:30 on Sunday, the Paradise Warriors, they visit the Northeast Eagles in Torbay for a game on 7:30. Back now to the East Coast Senior Hockey League. Sorry, 2 games Friday night, both ended in 5-4 wins. One had to be decided in a shootout, which is always exciting for the fans. St. John's Caps beat the Northeast Eagles 5-4 in that shootout game. Kyle McGraw had 2 goals in regulation time. Go figure. And he also buried in the shootout. Again, who would have thought? My God, he's good. But Roger Pender and Colin O'Neill had the other goals for the Caps in regulation. Jordy Eskett also scored in shootout for the Caps. Tyler Walsh, Tyler Bennett, Cody Barron, friend of the show, how are you? And Liam Myers all scored for Northeast. Meanwhile, the Conception Bay CB Stars, they beat the CB Blues 5-4 as well. 2 goals from Bradley Budden, including the winner late in the third. Matt Barrett, Brian Greeley, and Matthew Toomey had the other goals for the CB Stars. And Lucas Lush, Brandon Street, Luke Peddle, and Chris King all scored individuals for the Blues. Then on Saturday, the Clarenville Caribous, they defeated the CBs 8-3 on Saturday night in Clarenville. Chris Sparks, Ken Mahoney both had hat tricks for Clarenville, and Kevin Reed added the other 2 goals. 3 goal scorers for 8 goals, not bad. But Brett Shute, Brandon Carlson, and Ryan Dawson all scored singles for the CBs. Not a shocker to see Ryan Dawson starting to score goals for the CBs, as he scored many, many goals in junior with Bay Roberts. But upcoming this weekend as well, Lots of senior hockey action. Starting on Friday, the CB Stars will visit the St. John's Caps. That one goes at Twin Rinks at 7:30. Then at 8 o'clock, the Northeast Eagles are taking on the Southern Shore Breakers. That one goes in Torbay. On Saturday, the Caribous are back in action, this time against the Eagles. That one takes place out in Clarenville on at 7:30. Then Sunday, the Clarenville Caribous back home again. And they take on the CB Stars. That one goes 6 p.m. in Clarenville. And then the CB Blues are taking on the Southern Shore Breakers down in Southern Shore at 7 o'clock. And that's it until Wednesday of next week. But senior hockey is also being played on the West Coast as well, with more action this weekend. They're only a couple games into the season. It's only very new. But on Friday night, the Corner Brook Royals slaughtered the Port of Basque Mariners 13-3 at the Bruce Atoo Arena in Port of Basque. And honestly, we'll just leave that one right there, 13-3. But on Saturday, the Deer Lake Red Wings, they remain undefeated after their first two games. They beat Port of Basque Mariners 5-1. That one was in Port of Basque as well. Jalen Gillard and Luke Parsons both had two goals each for the Red Wings. Shout out to Luke Parsons. Shout out to both the boys. Actually, I played hockey with both the boys growing up, so shout out to both of them. And Deer Lake is holding first place in the league early with that 2-0 record. And they also have more games coming up this weekend. It will start on Friday when the Deer Lake Red Wings take on the Corner Brook Royals. That sounds so good to say. It's so nice to be able to say that the Deer Lake Red Wings and the Corner Brook Royals are going to play at 8 o'clock at the Hodder Memorial in Deer Lake. Then on Saturday, Royals back in action. Deer Lake gets the night off. Royals will take on the Port of Basque Mariners in Port of Basque. That one goes at 7:30. It was a busy whole entire week. I won't just say weekend at the Paradise Double Ice Complex as the Canadian Tire Para Ice Hockey Cup took place. And what a tournament. Just absolutely unbelievable. The Czechs, Russia, Canada, and of course the United States, the four teams involved in the tournament. It came down to Team Canada versus Team USA for the gold medal game on Saturday night, which was to no surprise. Canada and U.S. are obviously very dominant in the sledge hockey scene right now, so it was no surprise to see those two teams face off. That's pretty much what was expected coming into the tournament. Great showing from Russia and the Czechs as well. But it was a hard-fought. It was a hard-fought battle for Team Canada, but the Americans, they did claim their sixth straight para ice hockey championship, that beating Canada by a single goal for the fifth time, 2-1 for the fifth time in a row. In Paradise over the weekend. Just a devastating loss for Liam Hickey and the rest of Team Canada. It was a scoreless first period, but the Americans did manage to bury one in the second, and they potted another one on a dirty goal there in the third period. Canada did answer back with a goal late in the third from Billy Bridges, which was an absolute rocket, and that did bring the final score to 2-1. But honestly, it was a phenomenal effort from Team Canada. They gave it their all for the whole 45 minutes of play. I mean, it was a battle just until the very, very end. It did almost kind of seem like the writing was on the wall there for a little bit because, you know, USA being the team that they are, incredibly well put together defensively. They just played such a sound defensive game that it was hard for Team Canada to get any zone entry and really hang on to that zone entry. So, you know, once they went up 2-0, it looked tough, but then Canada got that one and they really came to life and they gave it their all, and unfortunately they didn't get the bounce to go their way to tie things up late. And US did go on to win 2-1 once again, but an amazing crowd out in Paradise as well. The roof was just ready to blow off the place when they finally scored that goal. And then if they would have tied it, I can't even imagine what would have happened. But a phenomenal effort from Liam Hickey as well. You know, a lot of pressure when you're a hometown guy like that. You're the face of the tournament. You're what everybody's talking about. There's a lot of pressure comes with that kind of title. So Liam had a great tournament. I'm sure he would have loved to bang one home there in that gold medal game, but Liam's just spending the last bit of time with the team together before they all go their separate ways in the next couple of days. So we'll have Liam in here next Monday on the program, and we're going to kind of go back through the whole thing and break it all down and get his thoughts on it all. But another person who, just before we go, Liam also finished 11th in tournament scoring. He had 6 points, 2 goals, and 4 assists. But there's a guy, Roy Ball, on USA, and he was on another level, to be totally honest. He finished first in scoring with 10 points, and he was the fastest guy alive, honestly. Like, he would pick the puck up in his own zone, kind of scan the ice for a sec, and then just beeline up through the middle, and he just blew by everybody and would give himself a partial break. It was incredible to watch, honestly, and just phenomenal athletes, each and every one of them. I can't imagine trying to do that at that level, and it was just absolutely spectacular to watch. If you've never watched it before, don't waste any more time. Go flick on a game of sledge hockey. Do yourself a favor. And if you ever have the chance to watch it live, do it. In other hockey news, before we got to go to the news, it is a little bit old now, but the boys deserve a shout-out nonetheless. Great to hear the two Newfoundlanders have been selected to attend the Canadian National Junior Hockey Team Selection Camp. So that's the under-20 Canada World Junior Team. Not a big deal. That gets underway in Oakville, Ontario from December 9th, which is underway today, to 12th, and it should be a battle, honestly. Alex Newhook, you've all heard of him. He's from St. John's. He's playing with Boston College. Not a big deal. Drafted in the first round of the Colorado Avalanche in the 2019 NHL entry draft this past June. He has 6 goals and 5 assists with Boston College so far this season. And then we have Dawson Mercer of Bay Roberts. He plays with Drummondville in the Quebec Major Junior Hockey League. He has 17 goals and 19 assists for 36 points in just 23 games so far this season. Not bad. Making a big impact. He also lit it up in the Canada-Russia Super Series that they do with the CHL every year. NHL Central Scouting has announced their midseason rankings of players for the upcoming NHL entry draft in June. And the December list does show Dawson Mercer ranked 16th. So that's right there in that first round. Again, not a big deal. They say Mercer drives the play with a lasting engine and that he's not afraid to hound pucks and is great in transition. That's pretty high praise. You got to love that. And lastly, the Pinty's Grand Slam of Curling gets underway in CBS tomorrow as of December 10th. Until the 15th, the tournament features 15 of the top men's teams and 15 of the top women's teams from around the world. And again, that's happening at the brand new rink out in Conception Bay South for the next 5 days. And of course, Brad Guju and the rest of Team Guju will be involved in that one, looking to get another win. But with that, I'm a little late to go to the news, so we're going to send it over to the VOCM newsroom. And when we come back, we have hour two on the Monday Night Sports Show, where we're going to talk football and a whole lot of hockey. We'll be right back on the Monday Night Sports Show right after this. Don't go anywhere.
This is the Monday Night Sports Show on the VOCM Big Land Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. This is the Monday Night Sports Show on your 590 VOCM and Labrador's Big Land FM. And now you can hear the difference between my news voice and my happy show fun voice. But I'm joined here live in studio by two pals of mine. So happy to get them back here in studio. Eric Hutchings to my left, friend of the program, and Jack McCarthy to my right, who has made his gracious presence back here in Newfoundland for at least the next few weeks. So we're very excited. Boys, welcome back.
Thank you, Ben.
Thanks for having us. It's great to be back.
Jack, right away, congratulations on your shiny ring that's on your finger, the X ring. I'll give you a shout out for that one because, you know, it's not a big deal.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate it. It was awesome to have you out in Antigonish to enjoy the celebrations with us.
I was happy to be there. It was indeed. But we're going to talk sports for the next hour. And we're going to start with the NFL. It was a pretty wild week. Some upsets. Some stuff pretty well went as planned, and some were just too hard to kind of bet on, to be totally honest. Some of the ones that some people out there, not pointing any fingers, might have bet on, definitely didn't go the way you would have hoped. But I'm going to start with the Packers game, because that's, I'll take the win for my boys right there. 20-15 over the Redskins, but that was a lot kind of closer than what I personally expected. Kind of thought it might be a bit more of a blowout than that, and especially with Green Bay getting out to a bit of a hot start. But then it's kind of like the wheels fell off for a little bit, and Washington stayed in it. What did you think? Starting with you, Jack.
I think just what you said. I mean, to get off to this hottest start as they did, and they were having a lot of success running the ball. I mean, Aaron Jones was moving the ball real well, and I think maybe that's something they wanted to stick to in terms of not having to rely on Rodgers as much.
Yeah.
The week before, they slung the ball around a lot in the air. So against like a bit of a weaker team, I guess maybe just trying to control the possession clock, which is fair against a team like Washington, a bit more inexperienced quarterback, rookie Dwayne Haskins on their side of the ball. So maybe starve them of the ball a bit, maybe trying to run it. And then, I mean, if he was stressing out, not as many opportunities, force the ball, maybe try and force some turnovers. But credit to Washington, they have been playing better in the past couple weeks, and they kept it close, but it never as close as it got, it never really felt too much like it was in doubt.
No, it did never feel like it was in danger at any point, but it was just like, this is just a little too close for, 5 points, something quick could happen that turns that around. It was just a little too close for comfort, but you're right, there was never that real point of a danger feeling. Eric, do you have anything to add to that?
Yeah, the Packers offense, it's weird because they have so much talent with your quarterback, wide receiver, and running back positions. They have studs at all of them. And their offense goes through these weird spurts in games where they can't get anything going. They got two touchdowns quick in the first quarter yesterday, and then they didn't get a touchdown again for the rest of the game. And the Redskins play this weird game where they're not going to throw the ball a lot with their rookie quarterback, and it's just running the ball and punting and playing the whole field position game. And so they can always manage to kind of keep things close. But you can tell that the Packers, they script their first 10 to 15 plays when they go out, and they have a plan, and then that goes well. And then it seems like when LaFleur is trying to call plays on the fly, he just can't get a chemistry going, and they try to hurry up offense, and then that doesn't work. And then it's just weird because they are still 10-3, so it's tough to say anything about them, and their defense is hot and cold. But if they can somehow put it together where they can be consistent on offense for a full game, they're going to be a really scary team. But then you're into week 13 now, or 14, sorry, and they still haven't been able to string together a full game offensively. And then same thing, they came out in the second half yesterday in their first possession. They looked pretty good. Maybe they scripted some plays to start there. But then once again, when it got into kind of that ad hoc play calling, it just kind of seemed like they were a mess and they couldn't get any flow going.
Yeah, and I guess like I kind of ask, like, what pros and cons, I guess, kind of come with scripting so many plays to start a game? You know, obviously, like, quite a few teams will do it. But, you know, what advantages and disadvantages kind of come with that? Because once you fall out of that those scripted plays, the wheels kind of fall off. Or in some scenarios, obviously it doesn't all the time, but it does happen.
Well, the whole idea behind scripted plays is that you're scripting your passing plays, your run plays, and your play action plays. And so from that, you're trying to get your opponents to think they're going to do one thing, and then you're going to start doing another. And then maybe you want to establish the run early so then you can go and play off play action later on. Or you want to come out pass heavy, try to get some of those linebackers out of the box, then you can run it later on. And then it seems like they have a good plan, and LaFleur is smart when you try to plan things out. But then you get in these situational football situations, and it just seems like he doesn't know when to call what sort of play. So it's going to be interesting to see now. They're obviously going to make the playoffs at 10-3, and just to see how that offense plays through an entire game in a postseason against a very strong opponent.
Another really close game yesterday was the Bucks and the Colts, who are now both at 6-7. What were your thoughts on that one?
My thoughts on that one was Jameis Winston's stat line was absolutely hilarious.
It's absolutely bizarre.
33 for 45, 456 yards, 4 touchdowns, 3 interceptions.
What is his ability?
3 interceptions.
He has the most uncanny ability of a quarterback I've ever seen to be able to make such quality passes and such quality plays in a game and then immediately back it up with such judgments and decisions when he's looking to pass the ball downfield, because he can go multiple series in a row where he's really just utilizing all his receivers across the board. He doesn't seem to have much bias. He's spreading between Godwin. Unfortunately, Evans went down. And he's making those big-time throws, those 20-plus yard throws down the field, and they're great, and they make sense, and he's just nailing them. And then it's like he just completely checks out for a certain period of time. It's almost every single time you check the score or you check their stat line, he's got multiple interceptions every single game. And in this game, it was a shootout, so you're going to have the potential for like maybe some more errors. But, I mean, he's throwing it down the field with the like expectation that he's always going to make that big play, and he just never seems to like come to terms with the fact that you can live to fight another down, which is a massive issue.
I just think he knows that he has Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, and it's like, screw it, I'll throw it downfield. Evans will probably catch it. Because that's what it seems like sometimes. I mean, he had that big play against the Giants to set it up where he just went and heaved the ball down. They missed the field goal. And a lot of the times, it seems like he stares this receiver down. So before the ball is even snapped, if the play is designed to go to Chris Godwin, he won't check out of that first option. He will stare Chris Godwin down the entire way and then throw it to him. Or if he realizes that he actually can't, he just goes, panics, and he'll probably just throw the ball downfield to Evans in hopes that he catch it. But it's funny now because I think they're 6-7 right now. And so they have 3 games left. So like, what if they go 9-7 and 8-8? It's a contract year for Winston. How can you justify moving on from Winston if you're a 500 team? You don't have a good enough draft pick to draft a quarterback that will probably be your quarterback for the future. Unless you want to let Winston move on and then tank this year, I'm not sure what you're going to do. On the flip side of this game, the Colts are also now 6-7, and they got off to that super hot start. And I remember everyone was saying Frank Wright, maybe coach of the year, Jacoby Brissett, who played really well. And obviously he missed that game and a half where Brian Hoyer came in, and they Well, Vinatieri had that kick against Pittsburgh to win that game. That was a loss. And then Miami came into their house and they lost that one. And I guess they do kind of have the cover to hide behind. This was supposed to be the Andrew Luck year and Andrew Luck bail. But still, it's disappointing from Indianapolis after getting off to that hot start.
Yeah, and like you said, just in terms of like whether you'd move on from Jacoby Brissett. I think it's a similar quarterback story in terms of being in that around that 500 record. I mean, he's newer, so they don't have any excuse to necessarily move on from them because, like you said, it was supposed to be Andrew Luck's year, and that was a surprise dropout, and Jacoby has played well when he's been given the opportunity. But when you're still hovering on that 500, and he wasn't really drafted to be implemented as a starter this early in his career, do you go in and look for another viable quarterback option in the offseason, or do you keep building with Jacoby? I mean, I personally like Jacoby Brissett, but he might not be. He's definitely someone that you need to build a really strong, sound offensive line, which they have with their draft picks. I mean, Nelson's a beast, and you got to work on the defensive side of the ball to kind of build a core around him. I don't think he can kind of take you on your back and win. He has shown that he can be solid, but some questionable, a little bit of fluctuation in his play as well. It leaves some question marks from the franchise if he's going to be their man moving on from Luck, or if he's just going to be a bit of a Band-Aid to kind of block the gap for the next year or two and then kind of make a decision from there. So that'd be interesting.
But at the same time, it's not like the AFC South is actually good or anything. I think they might be fine with Jacoby Brissett. I mean, Houston did come out and beat the Patriots last week, but, I mean, it's proven that that hasn't been hard to do the past few weeks, unfortunately. And then they come out.
Don't even be started on
Houston. And then they come out and get the doors blown off them by Denver yesterday. And then Tennessee, Ryan Tannehill is all of a sudden looking like a top 10 quarterback. They're 8-5 tied for the lead, and Tennessee might actually win this division because them and Houston still have to play two more times. So maybe the Colts aren't in a terrible spot. They have a good defense. They have a good offensive line. Maybe you stick. I think they definitely are going to stick with Jacoby Brissett, but it's not crazy that the Colts will win this division next year.
No, definitely not crazy at all. I mean, you'd like to think Houston would take a stranglehold in that division just with the prospects of having Deshaun Watson on the team. But they've been completely up and down. It's just, I guess that's been the story of the NFL this year, completely unpredictable.
Seriously, it has been. Oh.
But it's their offense and their, like, both their offense and their defense, it's like one week they're completely volatile and the next week they're as sound as it gets. It's just, it doesn't have a rhyme or reason to it. I mean, Deshaun Watson had nothing going yesterday. Their offense had nothing going. They got down in such a hole, and it is, as any football fan knows, garbage time always opens up. But it seemed like there was a little bit more to that when they just started to click. They really started to hum. Deshaun Watson was moving the ball like with his arm, moving it with his feet. I mean, they look great when they look great, but God, to get down, what was it, 38-3 they were down against a 5-8 Denver team? You can't do that.
I just ripped up everything, threw it all in the garbage. Everything was toast. It was done. It was ridiculous.
Bet365 account, zero.
Non-existent. With that, we'll take our first break here of the second hour, and when we come back, we're going to get into the shootout between the 49ers and the Saints that came down to the wire, and what's being deemed a possible game of the year. We'll be right back on the Monday Night Sports Show with Eric Hutchings and Jack McCarthy here in studio right after this.
The Monday Night Sports Show will be right back. This is the Monday Night Sports Show on the VOCM Big Land Radio Network.
The Monday Night Sports Show is brought to you by Maverick Sports and Collectibles, 250 Water Street. Everything for the sports fan.
Welcome back to the Monday Night Sports Show, everybody. I'm your host, Ben Murphy. I'm joined here live in studio by my pals Eric Hutching and Jack McCarthy, and we're breaking down Week 14 in the NFL. And we'll start with the 49ers and the Saints. What a shootout yesterday. And the 49ers come away just squeaking out a win, 48-46, kicking that field goal to as time expired off the clock. The 49ers improved to 11-2, Saints 10-3. What a game, just from start to finish. It was a great game. It got out, the defense has just got completely picked apart, and it's being talked about as one of these, you know, an already like a possible game of the year. What do you guys think?
I mean, like Drew Brees broke it down in this post-game interview, it was just a heavyweight tilt. Awesome. I mean, at those types of games, it's almost like you hope your defense is going to make a stop, but you can't expect it, and it's just blow for blow, and you just know. Whoever gets that last opportunity, you just can tell the whole game, that whole fourth quarter, how they were going back and forth.
Yep.
Whoever's getting that ball that last 2 minutes, if it's in one score, it just felt like it was going to go in that team's direction. And give credit to the Saints. I mean, they were down in the fourth quarter. Drew Brees looked awesome, hitting Michael Thomas on that slant across. And then I forget the young rookie's name, but number 10, who Drew Brees has come out and said he trusts him, he likes to go to him, that crafty little spin move to get in the end zone. But I mean, I think the biggest takeaway for me from that game was just I didn't really expect the 49ers to have the capacity. Just what their football team is based around, really, really dynamic running game, really structurally sound defense, and that's what's won them football games with Jimmy Garoppolo just being efficient, being reliable, but nothing too flashy, nothing too outstanding on paper. But when they've called on him, he's been able to make those plays.
Yeah, big time.
Emmanuel Sanders had a game, and just, I mean, Kittle's a safety blanket, so they've got to be the favorite for me in the NFC right now. They looked scary yesterday, but what a game.
Yeah, and Garoppolo actually, like in fantasy terms, he had 29 points yesterday individually, which is it's a big, big day considering Lamar Jackson had 20.
Yeah.
You know, which is still a great day. And I know because I have both of them, so I'm not a big deal. But Eric, go to you.
I think what this game was, it was a testament to how good of a play caller Kyle Shanahan is. You look at what he did in Atlanta, he turned Matt Ryan into an MVP that year when they ended up going to the Super Bowl against the Patriots.
And lost.
And they did lose, but they had no trouble putting up points too. And then you look at what has happened to Atlanta since he left. They've been an absolute dumpster fire. Haven't even gotten close to back to the playoffs. And then obviously his first 2 years in San Francisco, he never had his quarterback. He had Jimmy Garoppolo last year, obviously, but he ended up tearing his ACL and missing the majority of last year. And this was the first time where it wasn't the run game that propelled them to the win, like Jack said. In a shootout like this, they had to put it on Jimmy G's shoulder. He answered 350 yards, 4 touchdown passes, made all the big plays when they needed him to. And the weirdest thing was that these are 2 top 7 defenses, and they just both completely got shredded. I guess it was just the game flow of how that was going and how the play calling went. But it was insane. You always I put on this game in the end of the first quarter, I think, and there was already like 28 points scored or something like that, and it was insane, and it didn't even stop. And then, like Jack said, you knew that this was going to be one of those kind of Big 12 college games where it was going to be whoever has the ball last was going to score, and it was a great game and an instant classic.
If you told me, if you told me that Drew Brees was going to throw for just under 350 yards and 5 touchdowns in the air while also running for a touchdown, he's counted for 6 touchdowns, and that they were going to lose, I would have bet my life against that.
You
couldn't believe that. I mean, what a game. All things that were unexpected. I think one thing that was a takeaway just in terms of all the explosive offense that was going around, it seemed a little bit concerning to me from the Saints' perspective that Alvin Kamara still couldn't get out of the rut that he's been in. Yeah. And now he's a dynamic playmaker. Supposedly, I mean, just like back to fantasy terms, one of your top picks in a fantasy league, one of your higher offensive producing guys on a team, supposedly. And now every game is a mismatch and you got to play to your strengths. Mm. But 13 carries for 25 yards, I mean, averaging 1.9 yards a carry, that's just not going to cut it. Especially in such an explosive game, you'd have to think there'd be space out there for a guy like that, but it wasn't going his way. So that's an interesting one to look forward to, and just seems how they can start working him back into their game plan a bit more.
And another thing, just, you know, it was an electric game when you check Facebook and my old man's already making Facebook statuses about people. Turn that on. You know it's electric. You know it's a big one. Because I'm scrolling through Facebook yesterday. I'm sitting over in the newsroom, and then all I see is Wayne Parsons. And it's just like, guys, boys, you got to turn on this game. And I was like, all right, oh, my God. So you know it's a good one. But Lions and Vikings, that went pretty well as expected. A 22-4 win for the Vikes to improve to 9-4. But the Browns. Cleveland Browns, they beat the Bengals 27-19. The Bengals are 1-12. But it seems like things are disastrous right now in Cleveland with all this rumor. I guess we'll call it rumor because, you know, anything, and especially surrounding OBJ, you don't really know what's going on. But apparently the rumor is he wants out, which, you know, Eric, actually, I can point to you too, because we had talked about this on the show at the beginning of the season about something like this possibly happening if things didn't go right in Cleveland, which they haven't really to this point. Obviously much better than years past, but with some of the firepower they have offensively, you know, they were hoping for a bigger year. It hasn't panned out that way, and now it kind of seems like the wheels are falling off of it. So Eric, I'll start with you, and what are your thoughts on the whole situation? Well, I'll start with the game. What did you thought of the game and that kind of how that feeds directly into this, whatever this situation is?
Yeah, I mean, the game was what it was. I mean, you can't really read much into it when you're playing a 1-11 team.
Yes.
I mean, on paper, you are extremely talented. You were supposed to win the game. You won the game. I mean, they didn't look crazy impressive or anything. They ran the ball all right. They got ran against a lot. Joe Mixon had a really good game against them. But, and then in terms of the whole rumor thing, I mean, I mean, OBJ pretty much confirmed it. He said, I never said I wasn't unhappy here, but he didn't come out and deny it either. I mean, that was kind of to be expected. They haven't got him the ball like he was supposed to. And everyone likes to come out and blame Freddie Kitchens. And don't get me wrong, I do think he's a bad coach. But same thing in Dallas. Everyone just wants to blame the coach. But, I mean, these players aren't playing well either. I mean, Baker has definitely regressed from last year and what he showed last year. I don't know if that's because there's tape out on him from last year. And now defenses can read him better. But the play calling is the exact same. Freddie Kitchens called the plays at the end of last year when Baker really exploded. And that's why they kept Freddie Kitchens. Baker went to the owner and said, I want Freddie Kitchens to be the head coach of this team. And now everyone just wants to turn around and say it's all his fault. Yeah. And don't get me wrong, he has been great, but let's not act like everyone on this team is playing up to their potential or what was expected of them when the season started.
Yeah, and to your point about the game, Eric, it really didn't show any like positive light for me for Cleveland as a whole. I mean, they won the game. A divisional game can always be sloppy, and a win's a win, especially this time of year. But Baker threw for under 50%, under 200 yards, didn't throw a touchdown, threw for two picks. That's a pretty tough stat line. That, to me, just seems like Cleveland being a better overall team as a whole, coming out and doing what they need to do to beat Cincinnati was kind of inevitable. That it was just what everyone expected. But for them to do it in such a sloppy fashion, it just kind of pours gas on the fire just in terms of all the stress that's going on in Cleveland. And then the whole Odell situation coming out today about potentially playing with a sports hernia. And then Baker, I mean, you have to appreciate Baker Mayfield coming out. And it was almost like he was trying to defend Odell Beckham Jr.
Totally, yeah.
And then within his defense, kind of almost accidentally threw his training staff under the bus in terms of how they dealt with the injury. So it just seems like one of those things that you look to a team like the Patriots, a little bit biased, but you don't always need the best, like the best players, physical capacity guys, but guys that are going to gel together, work together, and just keep the drama low. Whenever a football team has drama going on, it just seems to take away from, they don't have a lot of time week to week, and a lot of a week to week basis in terms of practice, tape. You need to be gelling, you need to be focused on football, on to the next game, and that needs to be your only priority. And it seems like there's so many side conversations. Does Odell want to stay? Is he hurt? Who likes him, who doesn't like him? It's always this big sideshow, and it just takes away from the preparation of the game. And it's tough to have a good team when you've got that much drama on the side that's away from football.
But is it even really that surprising? I mean, once again, we're talking about the Cleveland Browns being dysfunctional and being a dumpster fire. It seems like teams that have problems like this consistently have it year after year. Same thing with Oakland at the beginning of this year. Oakland always had issues, and then Antonio Brown comes in, and then you have that whole blow up and things like that. And it seems like in any sport, it starts from the top down with your ownership down through your GM and through your coach. And for some reason, dysfunctional organizations do dysfunctional things.
And they get dysfunctional players. I mean, they've, like you said, those two teams are a great example, have been struggling, have been dysfunctional, have had issues in the locker room. And both those organizations went out and got guys that have, within the last season or two seasons, have kind of corrupted a locker room, gotten guys to go against the coach, all the things that lead to losing football that has nothing to do with your playing capacity. Like for Antonio Brown going to Oakland, they've had struggles. They were going for a rebuild. As good of a player that Antonio Brown could be, no one was surprised when all these kind of off-the-field incidents are happening. And then all of a sudden, you're on Hard Knocks. There's questions coming to rookies about this guy and what that guy and how you feel about him. And it gets everyone uneasy and getting off the point that you just need to play football
and win football games.
Exactly.
Before we go to the break, we'll squeeze it in. There's two more games I wanted to talk about. Of course, the most controversial one coming out of Sunday. And I know I'm sitting in the room with two Patriots fans, but
I was hoping we weren't going to talk about this one.
Too bad. but we're not going to talk about the Broncos, that's for sure. But no, so obviously the Pats take their third loss of the season back-to-back loss, 23-16. What kind of happened in your eyes? And before we get to that controversial play call, just let's talk about the game as a whole.
For me, I mean, it was just to have to go to, I love when we use the flea flicker, always works in New England, and I don't hate it on a first drive. But I was watching, pardon my take, earlier today, and it seemed like a really good comment that they make. For them to have to go to the flea flicker in the first few series kind of just shows that they're trying to have to be as creative as possible to do things for Brady to be able to find guys open. And, I mean, there's a whole lot of things, like, contributing to it. We don't have the same offensive line that we had last year that kind of protected Brady, gave him that time. And then it also has led to just our running game just not being as efficient. When our running game isn't there, the Patriots rely so much on the play action. And if that running threat's not there and our passing game isn't kind of what it hasn't been, then we just can't utilize them both together to just make good plays on both sides of the ball. And I think that was a point of concern. But just the fact that, in my eyes, it was one of the worst games, worst first halves I've seen us play in a while, to still be within two scores and to be able to keep it close throughout the game, that shows a little bit of positivity, like we were saying about Green Bay earlier. Still a 10-3 team, still very much in the playoff hunt. So room to improve, no doubt. But December is the Patriots' month, and I'd like to see a bounce back next week. On to Cincinnati, as Bill said.
Eric?
Yeah, well, Jack covered it pretty well. I mean, the offense just does not look great at all. To do, like Jack said, I mean, to get any sort of anything going, they had to run a trick play to get a touchdown there. But not to use injuries as an excuse, because you look at any team right now and everyone has key injuries. But with Devlin out, the fullback, they can't run the ball. Okay, so you have to throw the ball more. Who are you going to throw it to? You have Edelman, and he's getting doubled. And then after that, the receivers cannot get any separation or open at all. And so you have to try to force throws into tight windows. Going from Gronk, they don't really have a tight end who can block as well as he could. Don't even try to mention that any of them can catch as well as he can. They can't do that either. And it's, I don't want to overreact either, because, I mean, this time last year, they went into Miami and lost on that Miami miracle play, and they followed up by going into Pittsburgh, and they looked really bad there as well. So, I mean, I'm definitely never going to write them off. And the defense,
God, no.
And the defense is unbelievable what they were able to do. They're able to keep it close. So there's definitely ways to improve. And, I mean, their last three games, they're not going to be incredibly difficult by any means. Buffalo's coming to town in week 16. That's going to be a tough one. That's actually for the AFC East, as crazy as that sounds. New England and Buffalo playing for the AFC East in week 16. But, I mean, I'm fine with the defense, but the offense, you can't keep running trick plays to get wide receivers open downfield. It's all short passes to Edelman or James White, and then it's all yards after the catch. And so I'm not sure what they're going to do, because last year when they had this problem, they went and turned to the run game, and they were running that power eye formation with Devlin leading the way. Without Devlin there at fullback, they've been putting different defensive players in to play fullback. Like, they had linebacker Landon Roberts in there trying to play fullback and block. And then when you're losing one of the top two fullbacks in the league, a defensive linebacker isn't going to replace him. So, but they have probably one of, if not the best, offensive play callers and offensive coordinators in Josh McDaniels there. I'm sure he'll get something figured out. And as long as the defense keeps playing well and Tom Brady's your quarterback, you're always going to have a chance to win.
And to your point, Derek, just in terms of the play calling capacity, kind of in correlation with how our personnel isn't as strong as it's been in previous years, I feel like it's a very unique personnel, so there's only going to be so many ways that we can open them up for success. And I wouldn't put it past Bill Belichick, the way he schemes and how much he looks, as much as he says it's about this win this week, and I do believe that, he is thinking very much long term. They are almost indefinitely going to make the playoffs, so they don't have anyone coming in. It's, even though they're injured around their team, their offensive kind of skill position players aren't actually that banged up. So I feel like he might be holding back a little bit, some plays and some kind of schemes that he might have set for when it does matter a little bit more. Because a 10-2 game when you're going against Kansas City, who are probably a bit of a mismatch for them offensively, it might not be the game that you're not willing to die on that sword. Yep. You're waiting for the playoffs when it matters. So it'll be interesting to see them moving forward. I'm confident. I'm not going to write the ship. I said I'm not going to write them off. I could see them still win another championship if they can figure out a few things and then get to playoff time.
But they're calling the game different on offense too. Like, they're not going out there trying to score 35, 42 points a game. It's play well on offense, don't make mistakes, punt the ball if you have to. The defense will get you back that good field position. The offense is pretty much just out there playing not to make mistakes, as opposed to trying to make those big explosive plays, because they don't have a deep threat out wide. I mean, they brought in Mohamed Sanu. He's more of a slot guy. They don't have any speed guys on the outside. So it's just kind of a weird, grinded out sort of game. And that's how it's probably going to be for the Patriots. A lot of 21-24 games.
So we do need to take a quick timeout, but I do want to ask you, just before we go to the break, is there any chance whatsoever, just because you do see it all online, that Brady's an issue?
I mean, it's not the Tom Brady from 2007 who threw for 50 touchdowns and over an almost 6,000 yards, but he's still by no means a bad quarterback. I'd still take him over well over half of the quarterbacks in this league. But that's the thing too. It's the receivers aren't getting open either. There's no separation. He has to force a lot of balls, and he's not the top five quarterback that he was, but he's definitely not the issue in this offense.
Okay. All we need to hear. But with that, we'll take another break, and we'll be right back continuing this conversation with Eric Hutchings and Jack McCarthy on the Monday Night Sports Show, brought to you by Maverick Sports and Collectibles, right after this.
The Monday Night Sports Show will be right back. This is the Monday Night Sports Show on the VOCM Big Land Radio Network.
Welcome back to the program. We're talking football with Jack McCarthy and Eric Hutchings on the Monday Night Sports Show. And before we jump into Week 15 and looking at some matchups into next week, there was a very controversial play call pretty well at the end of that Patriots game yesterday that at first it was like, but when you saw the replay, it was like, oh my God, how was that one not overturned? Doesn't make much sense, to be totally honest, but as Pats fans, that was kind of the breaking point of the game because otherwise it would have been tied up. So go for it. Honestly, what are your thoughts, Jack?
I mean, it was extremely tough because, like you said, I mean, he didn't step out of bounds, but the fact that he was called out of bounds, it wasn't a scoring play, so not automatically reviewed, and they had no challenges left to call because they had to make the challenge on the Kittle fumble, which was ruled. So losing your challenge and then not having it and having that not reviewable, I mean, there's so many controversies this year in the NFL with what should be called like at certain times, what shouldn't be called. Mm-hmm. But to me, it's such a critical point of the game, clearly in bounds.
Oh, so clearly.
It was so clearly a touchdown. So, I mean, the Patriots have gotten good calls that have gone in their favor before, but that one was a dagger and ultimately, I wouldn't say decided the game, but certainly it led to 3 points.
Yep.
And it led to them having to go for it and trying to force a touchdown. They had to go for it on fourth down, one play to win or to tie or lose the game. And they didn't get it. Good defense to Kansas City on that last play of the game on Julian Edelman. But yeah, I mean, it's a game decider, which is tough to watch as a fan. But that happens in the NFL, and there's so many weird nuances to the rules in terms of what you can call and what you can't call and when and why. And, I mean, that's something they might have to figure out. But it was as a Patriots fan, it was a dagger.
It was.
And it doesn't make sense, and I don't understand why they don't just implement what they have in college football, where it's just a sky judge. No teams have any challenges. If there is a blatant missed call, the ref has a piece in his ear, and there's somebody up top who's watching the game, and they come down to the ref and say, pause the game, we need to check this play, and then it makes it so things like this don't happen. It's such an easy solution to go and do. And it doesn't make any sense. And I know in the last 2 minutes they go up to the booth for it. Why don't you just do that for the full game and take away the challenges? At least that way you get the game right. I don't understand what the NFL is doing. They brought in this pass interference rule, and they don't use that at all. So, I mean, and I'm not trying to make an excuse saying this is why the Patriots lost. I already said that they couldn't move the ball on offense or do anything.
Yeah.
But I just don't understand how every single week it seems like there's just so much discussion around the NFL about blowing calls, and it's just better for the game and a better product if they just have that sky judge up there watching every single play so then he can make a decision on what needs to be looked at so that the NFL, at the end of every week, it's not a discussion about why did they call this or how a call blew a game. It's a discussion about how great the games were and how good of a week it was.
I can't really disagree with that. That was very well said.
Yeah, that was great.
All right, well, moving on to Week 15 quickly. Who do you like in Week 15? There's a few good matchups. A lot are kind of...
There are not many good
matchups. There's a lot that are pretty one-sided if you look down through the week. I guess one that kind of jumps out that'll be a pretty good one, the Texans and the Titans, is probably one of the bigger ones, for
yeah,
sure.
Yeah, I mean, they're tied for the AFC South lead. That's big. In Tennessee, too. That's going to be a good one. Another good one that's pretty good is that the Rams are going to Dallas. Rams kind of had a revival last night after looking pretty lethargic on offense. And now Dallas coming off that loss to Buffalo at home, which was tough. Dallas has to win this one.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, I actually think Jerry Jones might have a heart attack if they lose. I mean, he was so upset on radio this week. If you haven't heard it, go listen.
I mean, I'm all for if any NFL owner wants to jump on the show at any given point. But when do you see an NFL owner jump on just like any random talk show every single week after the week? I kind of love it.
I think it's cool.
I think it's awesome, but you just don't see it. Jerry Jones is just like, the man is passionate.
Passionate and spinning out of control right now with their losses. I mean, losses against the Jets. I mean, you can't excuse that. And they've looked really bad. I didn't think the loss last week was necessarily as bad as some Cowboys fans might think, because the Bears, they kind of seem to play as if we all expected them to play at the start of the season, as bad as they have played. I mean, you can kind of give credit to them. I think Mitchell Trubisky did make a lot of better throws and ran the ball well when he had to. His decision-making was better. So the Bears looked good as a whole, and that can kind of be a credit to them winning rather than Dallas losing the game. Mm-hmm. And I think that'll bleed into one of the more interesting matchups for me in Week 15 with the Bears going against Green Bay. As we said, Green Bay got the win that they needed last week, but not as strong as a win as you would have expected against Washington. And Chicago looked much, much better. So it'll be, I mean, that division is a bit of a toss-up right mm-hmm. now between, I mean, the Vikings are pressing, trying to come back on Green Bay. So a big game for Green Bay to, I think, really establish themselves, a big divisional win, I think would put them in way, way better shape moving into the playoffs.
It's hilarious because it's going to be the most NFC East thing when one of these teams goes 8-8, and then they're going to... I promise you that whoever wins this division is going to win a playoff game. It happens every single year with the NFC East.
Yeah.
They go and they're bad. It's like the Eagles went and Carson Wentz went down and they were supposed to be dead. And then they went on and won the Super Bowl. Both years the Giants bet the Patriots in the Super Bowl. They were 8-8, squeaked into the playoffs as the winner of that division, and then went all the way. It's such a weird division where they just beat the crap out of each other and just can't get anything going. And then they come to the playoffs, and all of a sudden they pull out, they squeak out a win somehow.
And fun fact, just to add on that, if the winner of that division happens to have a losing record, the only two teams in history that have made the playoffs with a losing record have actually won that wild card game. So, I mean, you can't count anyone out once they make it to the playoffs.
No, God, no. It's anyone's at that point. But are any picks that jump out at you?
I personally think taking Green Bay at -4.5 is a solid pick. I think that line is as close as just after Green Bay, as we've talked about, just having a closer win and Chicago kind of showing a little bit more mm-hmm. of what they're made of. But I do think that next week, I mean, it's Aaron Rodgers, the bear killer, baby. He puts a couple on him.
The bear killer.
So I'd take Green Bay money line and to cover the spread there.
Exciting. Eric, any for you?
Just looking at them here now, I actually love Washington against the spread at home. Like I said, they are great at keeping it close. Philadelphia has struggled as of late, as I just mentioned. Washington can run the ball, punt it, play field position, and I like Washington and the points.
Cool. All right, there you have it. Zach, we're going to take our final time out of the evening, and when we come back, we're going to quickly touch on the NHL for the last 10 minutes of the program. We'll be right back on the Monday Night Sports Show, brought to you by Maverick Sports and Collectibles, right after this.
The Monday Night Sports Show will be right back. This is the Monday Night Sports Show on the VOCM Big Land Radio Network.
The Monday Night Sports Show is brought to you by Maverick Sports and Collectibles, 250 Water Street. Everything for the sports fan.
Welcome back to the program, everybody. This is the Monday Night Sports Show on your 590 VOCM and Labrador's Big Land FM. I'm your host, Ben Murphy. I'm joined here live in studio by a couple of pals, Jack McCarthy and Eric Hutchings. And just to quickly address one tweet on Twitter. Someone said Brady is the GOAT and asked what we were getting on with. Nobody disagreed with that. Just to say that right out loud. Again, I am sitting here with two Patriots fans, so I would have a hard time trying to make that argument and get away with it unscathed. But no one's disagreeing with that one. Just
best winner of all time.
Okay, no, he did fire back. Jim says it was a coaching battle. I think Pat's then figuring that out in the second half, not to mention two bone calls. Very fair. Pretty much all points we hit. And Jim, thanks for chiming in. We love it. A little bit on the NHL. We got a few minutes left here. It's been a wacky season so far in the NHL. There's been some big surprises. I mean, we've seen coaches fired and now this kind of changing of the hockey culture as we know it, I guess we'll say. But the standings, you can kind of jump right to that point because there's a few teams that are up in the standings and that are quite far down in the standings that would honestly surprise a lot of people, starting with, I guess we can say, the Tampa Bay Lightning. They're sixth place in the Atlantic Division. That sits behind Boston, Florida, Buffalo, Montreal, and Toronto. The only two teams they are ahead of are the league's worst two teams in Ottawa and Detroit. So, you know, is it time for, you know, maybe the alarm bells to go off in Tampa Bay? Is it time to panic?
I don't know if it's totally time to panic yet. It seems like their offense is kind of starting to click a little bit better as of recently. I mean, Nikita Kucherov was almost nearly 140 points last season, had a very slow start. He seems to be kind of coming on lately. And a few transitions. I mean, from last year, you're obviously going to have a few personnel changes. But, I mean, clearly that loss to Columbus really rattled their cage last year. Yeah. So maybe not totally unfair to have such a surprising playoff loss and then just maybe really taking a bit of time to find your mojo again. I wouldn't totally hit the panic button yet. They still have the core makings of what that team they had last year, which was one of the best regular season teams of all time. So I think that I do think that they're going to turn things around, and I'd kind of look to wait more towards the 10-game mark after the All-Star break, just to kind of see where their record sits then before I'd start making too many nervous calls.
Yeah, and you know, there's always this, will John Cooper be maybe the first one to go? I can't see them firing him this year unless, you know, things really do continue to go south in a hurry. But, I mean, they just have so much talent on that team, and it's only kind of a matter of time before they get firing. You know, like, you look at St. Louis last year. Yeah, you know, they underachieved all season long, and they did have a lot of that firepower, and they finally got going. So, you know, it's hard to imagine, like, the playoff picture without Tampa Bay in it, but something does have to change, and I did actually say Ottawa was the second worst team in the league. New Jersey is actually just lower than Ottawa, but only by a couple points. But Eric, do you have anything to add on that, or surprised it to the East at least?
Yeah, and I mean, speaking to what Jack said, I mean, they didn't just lose to Columbus; they got the doors beat off by Columbus. They got swept 4-0 in the first round, and especially when they were supposed to be a Stanley Cup favorite too. But to make it a coaching change, I don't think it's a bad idea. You look at Pittsburgh did it twice when they let go of Tyrion to bring in Dan Bylsma.
Yep.
And then they let go of Bylsma to bring in Mike Sullivan. And they won cups both of those years.
Yep.
And same thing. St. Louis made a coaching change in the middle of last year. And a lot of the times, too, it's not even the coach's fault, per se. I know you hear that all the time. But you just bring in someone new. A lot of the times, guys can get tired of hearing the same guy's voice over and over, the same sort of message. But obviously, something isn't working there. The way they lost to Columbus last year, I think, definitely has something to do with it. But I think it would be crazy to write him off or hit the panic button. Vasilevsky obviously has not played up to where he played last year in net. Mm-hmm. And then same thing coming out to the defensive forward. They just haven't played well together as a unit.
Another surprise out of the East, I think, would be New Jersey. You know, didn't expect them to be, like, a phenomenal team. We definitely said on this program a few times, I definitely did, that, you know, they should be good this year, along with the Rangers, who are also still, you know, not struggling. They're not that far out. Only 5 points out of that fourth spot in the Metro. But, you know, New Jersey has seriously underachieved, and now you can pretty much count on Taylor Hall's getting shipped out of town. But another surprise in the East, and it's not really a surprise that they're doing well, but the Islanders, you know, they're second place in the division. I mean, Washington is almost on a bit of a level of their own right now. They only have 9 losses so far. 5 of them are in overtime. So they're 9 points ahead of the Islanders, who are in second place. But, like, the Islanders have really played really, really good, solid hockey at both ends of the ice for 60 minutes all season long now. And they put together that streak of, like, some 15 straight games with points. And, you know, incredible. They really have kind of put it all together. And they don't have all that many superstars.
No,
you know, like, obviously Matt Barzal is right there on that, you know, on that cusp of having that breakout I am a superstar kind of thing. But otherwise, they don't really have that big name guy, and they're just getting it done as a team, and they have great coaching.
And it's funny too, because the three teams you just talked about, you talk about the Islanders, who are doing well, who have kind of worked with the same team for a while and developed and drafted Barzal and stuff like that. And then you have the Rangers, who went and signed Panarin, and everyone thought that was going to be the big thing. And then you had New Jersey, who went and traded for Subban. So, I mean, a lot of the times, just going and trading for this one big piece you think is going to work out, as we've seen numerous times across all sports, if he doesn't mesh with your team and he doesn't help you grow and take that next step, then it wasn't really all worth it. And you have this long contract and all that money and everything tied up. And you look at what the Islanders have done, where they've taken this team now. Obviously, they lost John Tavares, and then they were still able to keep building because they did have that depth. Barzal went, they drafted him, developed him, and he was able to step up and take that role. And a lot of the times, that's what you see. You just see, and like Boston, they've had what seems like the same team for forever. And they continually, it seems like they're in the cup final every second or third year. And so, and Jack being a fan of Boston, he knows that better than anyone.
Yeah.
And I just, I myself and a friend of the show, Ian Predham, who's a big Islanders fan, shout out to Ian there. But we were talking about that last week. It seems as if very different teams for sure, but the Islanders and the Bruins kind of have a lot of similarities in terms of how well they buy into the system. And I think Barry Trotz deserves a massive amount of credit. If you watch the Islanders, it's not flashy. It's not overly exciting. But their ability full buy-in, their ability to prevent high-end scoring chances, keeping shots to the outside, is wildly impressive based on the overall capacity that they should have player to player. But when you buy in and you're working the same system and everyone believes that it's going to work, I mean, it's a bit of a cliche, but I mean, it's clearly working. 15 straight wins they had, that's outstanding. And with a goalie switch up from last year too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, they clearly just seemingly have that one system, defensive-minded, low shot count, shots from the outside, keep the puck in, get the puck in deep. I mean, you can't argue against it.
Be a hell of a playoff series, that's for sure. But we're out of time, but just quickly before we got to wrap up. The Edmonton Oilers, they're first placed in the Pacific Division right now, tied for second in the West with Colorado. St. Louis just 2 points ahead there in first. But is it surprising to see Edmonton here in that first place in the Pacific, or did they just really underachieve last year and it was just a dumpster fire?
It is shocking.
Think so? Yeah.
Well, I mean, we looked at, I remember we all had discussion about it, and it was like, if you looked at their lineup at the beginning of the season and you put your thumb over McDavid, you're like, is this an AHL team? And it speaks to how good him and Draisaitl are and how they draw all the attention to themselves. And then they can kind of
make things out.
Give the secondary guys some relief. But no, I think it's definitely surprising, not only that they're in a playoff spot, but they're leading the Pacific Division.
Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously Arizona's right there at their heels. Same 32 games played, both tied with 40 points. But
we looked at the beginning of the season, and there was a little tweet that pretty much, minus McDavid and Draisaitl, a guy took all the best, what he thought of as the best free agents available in the free agency pool, and substituted it with the lines that Edmonton already had. And it was like debatable whether a full lineup of free agents on the offense was better than what they had currently had. So, I mean, that is really slighting a team that is now leading their division. Mm-hmm. But I think it just comes down. I mean, McDavid and Draisaitl together, that point production is fantastic. But I don't see them lasting at the top.
I would assume they'll round it out to the playoffs. I can't see them falling out of a playoff spot.
No, me either.
I think that would be drastic. But it just, like you said, it just goes to show the dominance that those two guys have. Because man, oh man, in 32 games played, 53 points for Draisaitl and 52 for McDavid. Like, get out of town. Both 19 goals. It's unreal. But with that, we are already late to go to the news. So Jack and Eric, both thank you so much for joining me here in studio tonight for the hour. I can't thank you guys enough. It's always a pleasure. So thank you for joining me again tonight.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Ben. Pleasure to be on.
And as always, on behalf of producer Mr. Zach Snow, thank you to our other guest tonight, Michael Kennedy, as well from Edge Talk Podcast. Go check that out. And thank you all for tuning in to the program again tonight. I'm your host, Ben Murphy. Thank you so much, and we'll be right back here next week to do it all over again. Have a good week, everybody.